Nukutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Dear listener, the following show is a playback.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Good morning, everyone. I hope Namibia is awake at this hour because we have quite a few things prepared for you, and I am putting that very very mildly. Yes, Namibia, you are tuned into Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And no, this is not a playback. We are live on this nice and chilly spring morning. I am John J.P. Lenga. It is 6 a.m. on Monday, the 7th of September, 2026. And this is what you are waking up to. So, SWAPO has vowed that Speaker Sarah Kogangelwa Amadila will be removed over our dead bodies, they say. The opposition has moved a historic motion of no confidence against her, but she can't rule on it because it's about her. The motion is deferred. The house is in chaos. Also, in business borrowing, or rather in business news, business borrowing has dropped sharply from 2.8 billion to 2.2 billion. Businesses are losing confidence. The economy is slowing. We'll be joined by Gabriel from The Villager to unpack what exactly this means for the rest of us, dear people. Malaria has surged from 12,000 cases to 122,000 in a single year, the worst outbreak since 2020. The government is finally launching a spraying campaign, but only after the damage was done. Recon Africa is raising $174 million to drill in the Kavango. Yes, yes, we thought we were done hearing about them, but no, they are still here. They are still pushing forward. Foreign companies are raising money on our resources while the likes of Namco is pushed to the side. And the Oshibarongo municipality owes $30 million in unpaid salaries, faces an $80 million debt mountain, and residents are marching again. Five stories. One question. Who is the system actually working for? Stick with me. We're unpacking it all together this morning. So, let's start with our democracy and the crisis that is clearly deepening by the day. So we had already spoken about this on Friday, right? A motion of no confidence has been moved against the Speaker of the National Assembly, Sarah Kogangelwa Amadila. It was moved by IPC MP Michael Mulunga, the first of its kind in independent Namibia. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are treading waters that we have never been in, uncharted. This is new stuff, really. The motion accuses Kogangelwa Amadila of ruling parliament with an iron fist, he says, and bias, and of failing to apply the National Assembly standing rules fairly and impartially. But now you see, here's where it gets interesting. And once again, unprecedented. We have not seen this in an independent Namibia. SWAPO has responded with defiance. Deputy Secretary General Wahekwa Herunga said the speaker would be removed, and I quote, over our dead bodies, unquote. Hey, that's what you call drawing a line in the sand, huh? As I was saying last week, it is now devolving into what we can only call, you know, playground antics. The August House has reached what can only be described as a new low. But we continue. It goes, and I quote, "They will not remove the speaker. We voted for her to be the speaker, and we do not see her doing any wrong," unquote, says Herunga. Let me say this one more time. He says, "They will not remove the speaker. We voted for her to be the speaker, and we do not see her doing any wrong." He called the motion nothing more than political theatrics intended to create chaos in the parliament. But here's the thing. The speaker can't rule on the motion because it's about her. And I had already, you know, elucidated earlier, or rather last week, on why ethically it would not make sense. It would be challenged because it's about her. There's no way that she would not rule in her own favor. So at the very least, at the very, very least, we have to credit her with that, to say here she is being fair, you know, in light of the accusations. It is about her, and she has to remove herself from that situation because bias will obviously take over. There's no way that she could be objective and balanced in that regard. So kudos to her, at least in that, you know, in that aspect. When Mulunga tabled the motion, Kuhongelwa Amadila said, and I quote, "I have to consider whether it can be tabled, but the ruling is deferred," unquote. And rightly so. She has effectively deferred her own ruling on a motion that seeks her removal. The motion remains in limbo. It is hanging in the air, dear Namibians, dear citizens, dear listeners. AR Chief Whip Vaino Angula has pointed out that the Constitution provides for the Speaker's removal by resolution of the National Assembly, he says, through a majority of votes. He also adds that a simple majority is 49 votes. The opposition currently has 45 voting members, while SWAPO has 51. Still remaining the majority, still having that power, which has been waning with every election over the past, I can say, three elections. Say, let me safely say two. Perhaps I'm also still waking up from the weekend. So that means that the opposition would need four SWAPO MPs, members of parliament, to vote with them to remove the speaker. Angula believes that could happen. And he says, "It is my belief that if we vote by secret ballot, there will be more than three SWAPO MPs who will vote with the opposition, because many have stated that they are not happy with the speaker either." That is what Angula says. Now, you know, if I just go a bit off script here, you know, it is really a precarious position that the August House finds itself in, because these four SWAPO MPs, if they do happen to vote against their own party, it is very likely to cause even more drama than what we are seeing now. There have been multiple reports of a fracturing taking place within the ruling party, that is SWAPO, with the split now looking like what would be called the reformists, those who want to see SWAPO move into a new direction. And then you have what might be are considered the old guard, the loyalists, those who want the status quo to remain as it is and to not change. But you see, ladies and gentlemen, as I said last week, there's a wonderful saying that originates from this motherland, this continent actually. And it goes, when the winds of change come, the tree that does not bend will break. I want that to simmer in for a second. Huh? So let's continue. Angola proceeds to add, and educate us really, saying, if the motion meets all constitutional and procedural requirements, it must be dealt with according to the rules. If it does not, the parliament must equally have the courage to say so. So let me get this straight. Right, let's pull out our ruler. SWAPO says, over our dead bodies. The opposition says the speaker is ruling with an iron fist. Yeah? She cannot be played with. The speaker can't rule on a motion against herself. And the house, the August house, is in chaos. Meanwhile, the IPC has raised serious concerns about how the speaker has handled the house. They say Standing Rule 111, subsection 1, requires complaints of contempt against a member to be referred to the community of privileges, not dealt with directly by the speaker. Okay? I hope we're all clear on this. I want to repeat this. Okay? IPC says that Standing Rule 111, subsection 1, requires complaints of contempt against a member to be referred to the Committee of Privileges, not dealt with directly by the speaker. So for those who have been following, what specifically did take place is that the speaker specifically took issue with the conduct of Member of Parliament Professor Job Ampanda, who is of the AR party. Now, in doing so, what we have just spoken about here with regards to Standing Rule 111 clearly indicates that that was not her baby. Now, remember last week, if you were listening, I was very, very clear with regards to, or not rather clear, but I took us down memory lane, so to say, with regards to Madam Speaker Sarah Kukongelwa Amadila's history, you know, for us to really get context on who she is and maybe to get a deeper perspective on what is happening now in Parliament. And the one thing that I did say, this was basically more on the side of praise, was that she seems to have a brilliant memory. You know, years and years and years of working in administration. While you were going through puberty, you know, that is when she started with SWAPO. So that mind, that muscle memory for being able to read, you know, these very long form documents, being able to memorize rules, regulations, laws, etc., what have you, I firmly believe she's brilliant at. So it is very unfortunate that in the case of Standing Rule 111, subsection 1, that requires complaints of contempt against a member to be referred to the Committee of Privileges and not dealt with her directly, clearly makes me a hypocrite now. You know? And it is unfortunate, but that is the reality. The IPC also continued by citing Standing Rule 104, subsection 1, which provides that a member may only be ordered out of the house after continuing with the conduct, despite a warning and after being allowed to be heard. Yeah? I hope this morning is not too chilly. I hope we caught that one. Let's go through it again. We are all learning as we go through this. IPC stated or specifically called on this one rule, Standing Rule 104, subsection 1, which provides that a member may only be ordered out of the house after continuing with the conduct despite a warning and after being allowed to be heard. Now, it has been a very, very, very hectic time for me since I arrived in Windhoek last week, Monday. I've taken on this role. You know, I'm settling back into to the Windhoek life. I'm just trying to get my feet together. But when I was taking in this information, the content, you know, looking at what is taking place in Parliament, I very much, very, very much remember the Speaker of Parliament not giving an opportunity to MP Professor Joba Mpanda to be heard. So once again, we have two rules now that have turned me into a hypocrite in light of what I have said last week. That is Standing Rule 111, subsection 1, which requires complaints of contempt against a member to be referred to the Committee of Privileges, not dealt with directly by the Speaker. Then immediately IPC hits another one, boom, to say Rule 104, subsection 1, which provides that a member may only be ordered out of the house after continuing with the conduct despite a warning and after being allowed to be heard. Because otherwise, what are the grounds for acting against, you know, any member of parliament if you are going to boot them without first hearing what they are going to say? So now we have two standing rules, black and white, that already hold water against the actions of the current Speaker of the August House, Mama Sarah Kuhongerwa Amadela. The party alleges that members have been ordered out of the house in circumstances where neither condition has been met. And then there's the question backlog. We touched on this last week as well. The Speaker's office confirmed that about 550 questions have been tabled since the start of the current parliament, which is last year, but only 166 have been disposed of. I repeat, about 550 questions have been tabled since the start of the current parliament, but only 166 have been disposed of. 166 out of 550. A question is not paperwork, opposition leader Imz Nashinge said. It is a crew in Walvis Bay waiting. And what does that line mean, really? I think I fully understand, man. Like, as soon as I digest it, I think to myself, you know, and I've been putting this to you, dear listeners, I've been putting this to you to say, when Parliament cannot move forward on the ground, things also do no longer happen. So much, whether it is with to do with our roads, whether it is to do with our industries, whether it is to do with medicines in hospitals, whether it is, it's a never ending list. It is a never ending list. You see, what is happening now is the equivalent of the board of directors not coming together, not deciding on anything while the company is tanking. Numbers are going down. People are losing hope in the long-term vision. Probably people fighting and complaining that, you know, I can't get a ride to work. Is there anything that can be done? Ah, my salary is not okay. It has not even been paid yet. I've been having this problem for a long time. If you can relate to that, now apply that situation to what is happening in our August House. Because again, that is basically the boardroom where decisions are made regarding our government and ultimately our country, our state. So, before we go further, let me explain what's actually happening. Because looking back, the question is, when the referee is the one being challenged, who enforces the rules? We just came from a World Cup, eh? And I know football is becoming ever more popular. So I put this to you once more. When the referee is the one being challenged, who enforces the rules? So, moving forward, you know I love to educate our listeners. I think it is very important for all of us to always be on the same page of understanding so that we as a collective can look forward in terms of what can be done. Maybe we can find resolutions. You know, maybe from the ground level, we might find that brilliant mind, that open-minded perspective who can come and help us once we know just a bit more about what's going on. Because I'm telling you, what is happening now in Namibia's history, it is unprecedented. This has never happened before. We cannot take the situation lightly because it was bad enough before we reached this point, going 16 months without passing a single ordinary bill. Bad enough. And even of those bills that have been passed, I don't think we even reach more than two. As far as I know, I understand that the mental health bill was being discussed. But once again, how far did they get? We've had more drama than progress in Parliament, specifically the National Assembly, last week. What can we expect moving forward when they proceed? If I have my facts straight, the Prime Minister suggested that they continue tomorrow. So a motion of no confidence is a parliamentary procedure in which members of parliament express that they no longer have confidence in a leader. In this case, the speaker. Article 51, subsection 2 of the Namibian Constitution provides for the removal of the speaker by a resolution of the National Assembly. The IPC's motion argues that the speaker has failed to discharge her duties fairly and impartially, understanding Rule 27. But here's the procedural drama now. When Mulunga tabled the motion, the speaker found herself in an impossible position. She said, "I have to consider whether it can be tabled, but that ruling is deferred." She cannot rule on a motion that seeks her own removal, so the motion sits in limbo. Nothing moves, hanging in the air. Now let's talk about the numbers, because this is where it gets interesting, okay? The National Assembly has 104 members. A simple majority for a vote is 49. The opposition currently has 45 voting members, okay? SWAPO has 51. If the opposition votes as a bloc, they would need 4 SWAPO MPs to vote with them to remove the speaker. And we touched on this before to say, this is where it gets very interesting. Because are we now saying that we will have these SWAPO MPs all in agreement? You know, that is what would be expected as a loyalist. But the reality is that there are reformists, even sitting there now in the National Assembly as members of parliament. They are there. They are those who firmly believe that, no, I am very loyal to SWAPO. But certain things must change. So what we are looking at now is whether or not they actually will make that move. Because one can only imagine what's the next thing that's going to happen. You know, I recall earlier this year, where the fracture that I was speaking of earlier within the ruling party, SWAPO, became exposed was, you know, you had situations in Grootfontein where, you know, you had even individuals now being questioned as to who are these guys. They seem to have so much money and they contribute to the party. And when all of that came about, or rather came out into the light, it became very clear that, so the comrades amongst one another are also bickering. You know, they are not in agreement on everything. And some firmly believe, you know, the concern especially was, you know, why are these people reporting on my life, etc., etc. This is one of the individuals who will not be named at this time. But in response, the comrades told him, my friend, this is what the people need to know. The people need to know. These were screenshots that made it to the streets, if I can put it that way. And the more I think of this, the more I look at our drama taking place in the National Assembly, in the Parliament, and I think to myself, this is going to be very, very interesting. Because as I said, I want us all to understand this very well, okay? The National Assembly has 104 members. A simple majority for a vote is 49. The opposition currently has 45 voting members. SWAPO has 51. If the opposition votes as a bloc, they would need 4 SWAPO MPs to vote with them to remove the speaker. Quite a challenge. Quite a challenge. Because out of SWAPO's 51 votes, if only 4 of those give over to the 45 that the opposition has, what happens next? They will sit with 47, and you will take that 4 and add it to the 45, and they will have their 49. So it is tricky. I can only imagine the secret meetings that must be taking place. You know? We'll see what happens. AR Chief Whip Vino Angula believes that it could happen. He says, it is my belief that if we vote by secret ballot, there will be more than 3 SWAPO MPs who will vote with the opposition. Because many have stated that they are not happy with the speaker either. Boom. Now we have it coming from inside the house itself to say that, no, there are indeed SWAPO-aligned MPs who are not happy with the conduct, who themselves want things to move forward, who themselves understand that the disruptions do not do justice to the people of this Namibia. SWAPO parliamentarian Willem Antenya said the issue is not simply whether SWAPO could vote against the motion, but whether the motion itself meets constitutional and procedural requirements. And that in itself becomes another tricky one. Because if this motion is not tabled properly, I see we have a call coming in. You know what? Let us take it very quickly. Caller, you are live. It is Eagle FM. Good. Talk to me.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you? Who am I speaking to?
I'm speaking to Ango Bona.
How are you doing on this Monday?
Fine. Thank you. We thank God for the Brew Monday.
Indeed, we do.
I don't know why it's called Brew Monday.
We will do the research and get back to you.
I think so. We need to understand this because it's Brew Monday. I mean, at work. Brew Monday. Somebody missing the work is because of Brew Monday. So, you see, I think this is also a good time because people are listening and they are going and things like that.
Yeah.
Before they get into their office, because it's very strict for you to just go out and start calling.
Yeah, it's true.
Like I said the other time, it's depending on the nature of the job as well and flexibility. So, you see, that thing, I was also where you are cutting your things. I was, don't know there's a standing rule, but I mean there is standing rule, but what? So all those things, because there's no way members of SWAPO can switch or whoever can switch to those positions and they make up that number. I don't think so. There's no way. Unless maybe there's some kind of betrayal. I mean, my understanding and reasoning on that point. If not, there's no way. And the other thing is that if the motion is deferred, or maybe deferred, whatever, and they still have to go through. Does it mean that they did not, that motion still have to, the complaint and all these things still have to go through the privilege committee before it gets to the speaker?
Yeah, no, that is now the challenge, because at the end of the day, you know, on the technicalities, I don't want to lie to you. But what for me is a concern, coming from me personally, is that how long will this take now again? You know, with all that we have seen, 16 months, no ordinary bills passed. So yes, I don't want to lie to you, but my first thought is that how long will this motion now take again, when already previous motions, we have a backlog, you know, of how many questions, 166 out of 550 questions still to be answered. You know, how many bills have been tabled and not even been discussed. So it's, yeah, it's tricky.
So now, that brain, you go see, and I listened to the Honorable Speaker of Parliament at one point when he was giving a feedback, and he was actually mentioning about those delays, barriers, questioning, and the people have to go now and start looking for answers. When you bring the answer again, then the counter questioning and all these other things, and back and forth. And if all the members of parliament can realize then that, yes, this is actually delaying our progress and people need to be saved there, then why should because that disagreement there, on the issue of disagreement, and that, yes, I don't think it could to lead to this level where the bill are not going to be passed, and the delay and all these things, especially when they are now talking about, I think it was the APC, who is saying that, you know, it still has to go through the privilege committee. Even maybe the procedure from the onset, it appears if these things shouldn't just go to the speaker herself, but it has to go through that structure. And if that is the case, why were they then saying that the speaker is refusing to sign, or was he supposed to have signed first before it go to the privilege committee? How does it work there?
Yes, even in that regard, again, those technicalities, I don't want to lie to you. I'll definitely have to educate myself for future reference. But what is clear, you know, we have two standing rules now that the speaker has basically transgressed. So let me just run quickly through. If you were listening earlier, you know, standing rule 111 subsection 1, which basically requires that any complaint of contempt, which is now basically what MP Ampanda was accused of, so any complaint of contempt against a member must be referred to the Committee of Privileges, as you're saying. It's not dealt with directly by the speaker. And then the second one, Uncle Bon, I hear you. Just give me this one. Standing Rule 104, subsection 1, also provides that a member may only be ordered out of the house after continuing with the conduct despite a warning and after being allowed to hurt. So yes, with what has to happen next, again, I'm not sure. I'll definitely reach out to the parliamentarians that I know, those who work at parliament, and you know, get clarity on that for us. It's a very good question that you are asking, but realistically, this question still remains. How long will it take now? Is it going to become a tactic?
So it means that the complaint, Professor Job Ampanda's complaint, supposed to have gone through the privilege committee.
I really don't want to lie to you.
Yes, because when I was also looking at this section 111 subsection 1 here, whatever,
yes,
and this other one 104, same section, I was now thinking that this now complaint, is it a complaint against the speaker, or is the complaint on behalf of Job Ampanda that he has to go through the privilege committee before it goes to the to the speaker. I mean, this, I do not understand. Okay, I think it's, whatever the case, I'm also with the, I agree with you that whatever the case is, the problem is that when are the people, when are the bills going to be passed, and those things are they want to save the masses. So, and the people are waiting for the service there. The bills become enact, to become act. And if there's nothing and we have people are complaining here, what will then happen if there's some kind of reform that need to be done in terms of land allocation or whatever the case may be? So let's see here. I'm just saying that it's good to do it this time as well. So let's hear from the experts.
Yes, absolutely. And your questions were so important. I already have taken note to say, hey, maybe I must also go and look at all these standing rules and understand very well what is taking place. And I think it is up to all of us really to do that duty, because how can we hold these people accountable? I mean, you know, parliamentarians, they already don't have, you know, when we go to work, we have to sign performance agreements and they don't have any of that.
Sometimes we don't also hold ourselves accountable, ourselves as a subject.
Indeed.
In the legal order. We don't also hold ourselves to account. So, but in conclusion, what you have started is good. You have adjusted already. This is your platform. And like you said, no, I'm still adjusting myself. You know, but you are fine. We are happy with you.
Ah, thank you so much, Uncle Bona. Always a pleasure to hear from you, and I'll keep trying to do my best to, you know, maintain the standard.
God will help you. Thank you very much. Have a blessed day.
Amen. Thank you. Enjoy your day and week as well.
Thank you.
Goodbye. All right, so that was Uncle Bona there. Wonderful, wonderful question. I'm actually enjoying the calls from all of you dear people, because I can tell, man, Eagle FM has a listener base that really cares about the country. That's number one. Number two, you guys you understand. You know, you are well read. You pay attention to what is happening around. And honestly, this is for me a dream to constantly speak to such people. I can easily connect with the people in the offices wherever they are easy to find. But to find people who have, you know, before I came to take on this role, I was doing Gyango, in the north, in Oshakati. And that thing, when you are connecting with people who are at the grassroots level, it's unmatched when you can really get into understanding that people actually care about what's happening. But the reality is also now what we are discussing about what's happening in parliament is something that demotivates a lot of people. You know, very early on when we started this show, just after six, as the hour commenced, we are going to get into that, by the way, later in the show, with regards to the economic situation of the country. It's not looking good. It's not looking good at all. And the boardroom where all these decisions are made to improve the situation, the boardroom is stuck. August House is in chaos. But as we proceed here, you know, SWAPO parliamentarian Willem Antenya has said the issue is not simply whether SWAPO would vote against the motion, but whether the motion itself meets constitutional and procedural requirements. That was the last thing I was saying before we got our call from Uncle Bona. He specifically says SWAPO will defend due process. If the motion meets all constitutional and procedural requirements, it must be dealt with according to the rules. If it does not, the parliament must equally have the courage to say so. And I love that. A very, very, very balanced tick for him to basically say, on paper, we already have what should guide us. Let us follow it. If the motion meets all constitutional and procedural requirements, it must be dealt with according to the rules, which I will definitely jump into to give us an educational segment somewhere in this week. You know, and I'll try my best not to make it boring and long. So the numbers are tight, man. It's very, very tight. The speaker can't rule on her own removal, and the house is in chaos. The question is, what happens when Parliament reconvenes? Will the motion be tabled now?
Will it pass? And what does it say about our democracy that we've never had to do this before? That is the main question that we must be discussing. Seriously. This is not a nothing thing. This is not a thing of I don't care about politics. Believe me, politics affects you regardless of whether you care about it or not. What does it say about our democracy that we've never had to do this before? So, let's quickly take a short break. And then we will run into giving you the headline reviews.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
All right. If you are just waking up, good morning on this wonderful chilly, and I see a breeze outside. So this chilly, breezy Monday morning, it is the 7th of September, and we are covering quite a bit. We've just been discussing what is taking place in Parliament. Absolute chaos. There's no other way to put it. We can only hope that our MPs and everyone involved will now be able to show us why they are there and whether they deserve to be. This is where their intellectual prowess will now be tested moving forward, because the Namibian people are watching. And not only that, we need the August House to be in order. You know, we really desperately require that. But moving forward, this is the voice of John J.P. Lenga. You are listening to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM on this morning, and we are now about to move forward with our headline review. So let's run through what's making news this morning in Namibia and beyond. So we have the parliament that remains in crisis. SWAPO has vowed that Speaker Sarah Kuhongelwa Amadila will be removed, and I quote, over our dead bodies. The opposition's historic motion of no confidence remains deferred. AR Chief Whip Vaino Angula says the opposition needs 4 SWAPO votes to remove her. And he added that there are already a few who might vote in, or rather against, the Speaker of Parliament. Next, business borrowing has dropped sharply. From January to July 2026, businesses borrowed $2.2 billion, down from $2.8 billion in the same period last year. Gabriel from The Villager will join us later to unpack what this means for the economy. Malaria has surged from 12,003 confirmed cases in 2024 to 122,612 cases. Yes, you are not hearing this wrong. Malaria has surged from 12,003 confirmed cases in 2024 to 122,612 cases and 122 deaths this year alone. The worst outbreak since 2020. Next, we have Recon Africa raising $174 million through a bought deal public offering to fund further exploration and production testing in its Namibia operations. Moving on, Oshivarongo residents staged another demonstration. We covered this last week. Turns out while we were talking, they were planning another one. This time over the municipality's alleged delays in writing off pensioners' accumulated debt. The municipality faces an $80 million Namibian dollars debt mountain and owes $30 million in unpaid salaries from a 2014 labor court order. Next, we have the government distancing itself from a leaked document on Namibia Air, insisting no binding agreement has been reached with Ethiopian Airlines. Also, according to the villagers Anakleta Ikera, the Rundu Town Council has launched a wholly council-owned commercial subsidiary, RTCCS, to unlock commercial opportunities and generate sustainable revenue. Omake to that one. We also have the government introducing a 5-year investor permit to ease business entry, effective 1st September. Before moving on to anything that is relevant as far as continental headlines, I do have the Namibian Sun here before me, as well as the Republican, and they're both practically saying the same thing. The president, Her Excellency Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, says that fish must be landed and processed locally. So we look forward to that as well. Definitely would love to prepare something on that and dissect it later this week. In continental headlines, we have President Nandi-Ndaitwa, who has returned from Angola after attending the African Union's 21st extraordinary session, where she pushed for an African-funded peace plan for the continent. And in global headlines, Namibia has rejected a United States health data and specimen sharing proposal, citing sovereignty and privacy concerns. Namibia joins Ghana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa in declining the US dollar 40 million, again, $40 million grant offer for HIV and tuberculosis programs. I know some people are very happy hearing this. You know, the Pan-Africanists, you know, those who have concerns with the West and what could be deemed neocolonialism. You know, as we continue to fight for our sovereignty, this will definitely be good news to those to say, yeah, let's manage on our own, man. You know, especially now with all the oil that we are finding, why are we still beggars? Can you imagine your bra coming from Ludwigsdorf to you there in Vanaheda and saying, bro, can you hook me up with something? Yet you know that they came from a mansion and that there are 3 cars parked in the garage. It the first thing you will ask them is, what's going on with you? Are you not able to cope? But moving forward from being candid, China-EU rivalry over critical minerals could give Namibia greater leverage as the country's expanding partnerships with both powers create opportunities for better financing and infrastructure deals. And we can only hope to basically play them against each other. This is business. You know, we don't have to look at this as something that is unethical. We have what they want, and more so what they need. In the world of business, it's simply scratch my back and I scratch yours. Nothing complex there. So, we will take a little bit of a break once more after giving you these headlines. And then after, we are going to take a deep dive, our first one for the day, which is the human cost of parliamentary paralysis. A nation in crisis. Yes, yes, yes. We are not letting this go. We need to understand what is taking place so that we can know what role that we play, you know, in the greater scheme of things as far as trying to help the situation. We cannot just hold our hands behind our backs and say, well, you know, the house is burning. Let's see what they do about it. Because they ultimately in parliament represent all of us. This is a problem for all of us. And if you don't vote, well, then just maybe you can be one of those to say, you know, those negative things. And I put it negative. It's very negative to say, I don't contribute as far as my country is concerned. in all those political matters. I do not believe that there's anyone to represent me. You may be justified right now, granted. But realistically, this is our country. We actually need, you know, to give a shred of concern at the very least. To say, how can we make sure, if not for yourself, then for your children, your nieces, nephews, you know? If not for yourself, for the others that you share this land with. All right. Let's take a very short break and then we can get back into it.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. We took a short break there so that I could just get myself together and make sure that I'm still delivering to you as per the standard that the wonderful Uncle Bona has, you know, spoken to earlier. I am very happy to be with you all here on Eagle FM. I am very happy to be doing Unpacking the Day. I can only thank God. It is something that I believe, you know, allows me to speak to the people, to get them to hear what is necessary. But of course, you know, in as much as this is a platform that one would say is mine, so to say, I believe that I need to do a service to every single listener. And so moving forward, we are moving to a question that should concern every Namibian. While Parliament is in chaos, who is paying the price? When Parliament is in chaos, who pays the price? We've been talking about the motion of no confidence, the speaker's deferred ruling, and the political theatrics. But let's not forget what's happening while Parliament argues. The petroleum bill, critical legislation governing vital national resources, has been languishing since last year. We just touched on oil before the break. Yet the very bill, and this is now the reality I was speaking to early in the show, the very bill that will give us critical legislation governing vital national resources has not been touched since last year. The land bill and regional councils bill failed to pass in 2024 and remain under discussion. The 8th Parliament has now marked 16 months without passing a single ordinary government bill. Meanwhile, Namibia is battling a severe socio-economic crisis. It's bad. I think, you know, we are the land of the brave. It's not too long ago that we're pushing on 40 decades now of being independent. We were not given that. We fought for it, tooth and nail, at every level. From bullets to ballot boxes. You know? We used every possible avenue to get to where we are today as a sovereign nation in this free republic, Namibia. So, moving forward. The 8th Parliament has now marked 16 months without passing a single ordinary government bill. The reality is that right now, as bad as things are, as I was saying, we are the land of the brave. We perhaps are being tolerant. You know, I used this word last week, educated a bit on it. Maybe we are being a bit tolerant, you know. Many people would ask the natural question, what can we do? I will definitely get into that. I'll be absolutely sure to continue to have educational segments to say where can we empower ourselves as citizens of this nation to affect the situation at hand. Because ultimately, if our economy is not doing well, as I've been saying, if our economy is not doing well, and the boardroom, so to say, where these discussions must happen and decisions must be made are not happening, what happens to the rest of us? The streets are populated by the homeless and landless. The populace is overtaxed, terrified of rising crime. You know, let's not even talk about, I have no doubt that as the numbers of crime increase, it becomes quite the challenge, I'm sure, for the Namibian police to report on everything. And, you know, for those who have heard before in past, I've worked in law enforcement, specifically the Correctional Service of Namibia. And before that, even one thing I became firmly aware of, and this is not just a Namibian thing, it's just in general, the police don't like it when the press, the media, or the general public finds out about sensitive work, especially investigations that are still ongoing. Why? Because it allows everything to become distorted. Ideally, an investigator, detective, an ethical one, one who is good at their job, would not want others to be aware of what they are doing, because investigating would usually mean, you know, I need to move incognito. I need to move undercover, so to say. The less people know that I am a dog sniffing around for evidence, the better, you know, success I might have at the end of the day. So realistically, I can tell you now, of the horrible things that are happening out there, only few will reach the general public. It's not everything. And you have to understand the why of it. But I do recall activist Michael Amshelelo saying years ago that if our government fails, yeah, we can say about 3 to 4 years ago, to say if our government fails to remedy the situation regarding joblessness in our country, as the economy dwindles, we will see an increase in crime in a manner that is akin to what we see in South Africa. Now, guys, anyone who actually doesn't live under a rock knows that what happens with our neighbors when it comes to crime is just a very different level to what we experience in Namibia. I even firmly believe that South Africans are tough people the way they are because of the types of crime that they must face. You don't have to go far. I told you, you know, I'm a tech guy. I love the YouTubes and the Googles. Go look on YouTube and see how people can pull into their yard and boom, guys have run in, ready to rob you before your automatic gate could even close. Go look at hijackings and how normal that is. I mean, since I was a child, we were warned about hijackings. We had friends who would travel to South Africa and they'll tell you, no, this happened to my cousin this holiday. Oh, we saw it happening right in front of us. I don't want to keep going down this road. It's not a nice thing to say, but where I want to conclude is that could be us before long. And if you don't believe me, have some discussions, whether it's with your neighbor today, whether it's at work once you have that coffee and you've settled down, have that discussion about what's happening with house breakings, you know, what's happening on the streets, with people having their items taken from them. And then consider that the wonderful thing about Namibia is that violent crime, like I said, it happens. It's just very underreported. If the police can help it, you will not hear about it, because their job is to keep you safe, and it starts with keeping you calm. It just comes with the package. So when we look at the perpetrators of these crimes, you know, I want to bring in this perspective of, are they all bad guys? Or are people just trying to eat and finding the shortest route from A to B? In moments of desperation, human beings become very uncharacteristic of themselves. You know, we hear stories. I think it was less than 2 weeks ago, there was a young man who I believe was shot and he lost his life. May he rest in peace. He was busy committing a crime. Maybe if there's someone who could remind me later on when we do have calls, feel free. But this young man, he was committing a crime. So others who are feeling the pain of, you know, just having recently gone through something, they are not likely to show sympathy. But then you look at his mother and her comments. She only knows her son, the person that she was trying to raise to be, to contribute to this society. But then when you are pushed to the point of desperation, I mean, I know someone is probably thinking, oh, is this guy trying to justify crime? No. What I'm saying is this, is have you never been desperate before yourself? You know? And ultimately, that is where we are being led to as a nation. It might still be fine now, but how long before we get too desperate? We are already starting to hear of these types of crimes taking place, like I said, in comparison to just South Africa. We don't have to go far. Very violent crimes. They've always made top 10 lists consistently as far as violent crimes, murders, sexual abuse. It's really bad there. And what I'm trying to put it to you, dear listener, dear citizen, dear Namibian, is that are we going to wait to reach that point and then try to ask ourselves what we can do, you know, within the little capacity that we find ourselves in? Because believe me, we are all struggling. So we can't even begin to speak to what mass unemployment is really doing when we analyze this situation properly. It is something that, yes, we look at the government, but even in our, in and of ourselves, with the little that we are capable of, sometimes we can help one another while we wait on the government, because as it stands right now, we don't know how long it is going to take before the situation is remedied. If you can hire someone to clean your yard for $50 for that day or whatever, try it. Because it's very likely that $50, when he goes and buys food, he or she even goes and buys food later on, this person might think twice and say, hey, maybe I should not take from someone tonight. Maybe tomorrow, now that I have energy, I can walk further and find more work. And that would mean more money. So there's definitely a humane aspect that we have to employ here right now, because yes, things are serious. My tone is not an exaggeration. Things are very serious. So I want to move forward from that, coming back to the whole larger situation of the severe socioeconomic crisis, and to give you an example of the Oshivarongo municipality. Residents of Oshivarongo marched through the streets last week, calling for the removal of the mayor, chief executive officer, and councillors over long-standing municipal and service delivery concerns. We touched on this last week as well, on Friday specifically. According to community activist Marcelina Sanambi, residents have become increasingly frustrated by issues they say have remained unresolved under both the previous and current council administrations. So I want us to just take note here. They're not just unhappy with who is in office and in holding the seat now. What they are saying is that even before them, so it's not even personal. So what they are really demanding is not just that, you know, these people leave It's ultimately that the office in itself begins to perform and serve the people, because that is its intended purpose. The grievances include persistent service delivery failures and other municipal challenges that residents have repeatedly raised with the local authority without receiving satisfactory responses. But it gets worse. The municipality has yet to implement a 2014 salary directive, despite a labor court order to pay over 30 million Namibian dollars in outstanding adjustments to 20 employees. 10 years. 30 million Namibian dollars. A labor court order, and the municipality still hasn't paid. Pensioners in Orotoveni owe more than 11.3 million Namibian dollars. The municipality still hasn't paid. Oh, excuse me. 11.3 million Namibian dollars. The municipality faces a sharp increase in outstanding rates and taxes from 65 million Namibian dollars in January to nearly 80 million Namibian dollars by the end of March. Residents marched again over the municipality's alleged delays in writing off pensioners' accumulated debt. They have given the municipality until 8 September to respond. And if I have that correctly, they didn't say 8 September next year, so that's tomorrow. So we will follow up. We will get back to you on that. Perhaps we will give you an update on Wednesday with this developing situation. But here's the kicker, no? Urban and Rural Development Minister James Ankwasa, the same minister the Komanen are marching against, raised concerns over governance at the Oshiwarongo municipality just last week. Ankwasa condemned the prolonged suspension of staff members and questioned the allocation of land. He warned that no local authority will receive a budget allocation until it can prove that its financial statements have been audited and are up to date. He said, local authorities will not be audited until 2025. Those that have been audited have received disclaimers or adverse opinions, yet these local authorities continue to have chief executive officers or acting chief executive officers whose contracts of employment have been repeatedly extended. This raises questions about the reason for such extensions. So he said this before, okay? So the minister who won't listen to the Komanen is now warning Oshiwarongo about unauthorized expenditure and questionable CEO contract extensions. And I just wanted to add, right? Like I've said before, I've also praised the minister in past for his, performances, you know, especially how he ruffled feathers as soon as he got into office there back home, as my lovely people from Zambezi like to say. You know, people got fired. No long stories. And we were like, yes, yes. But then if you were listening last week when I was covering this situation specifically regarding the Komanen, activist Sean Gari said, you know, he really hit hard when he said that, look, we followed the rules. Traditional Authorities Act is at number 25 and of 2000. He said, we followed the rules. But now you are telling us that we were supposed to speak to you and that you knew nothing and that we didn't ask you anything. So the exposure here is that, okay, maybe your intentions are in the right place, dear minister, but are you looking at, you know, what is on black and white, the papers that guide you, the documents that you are supposed to follow and that empower you and your office and your entire ministry, ultimately. It's exposed. It now begs the question, are some of the issues that we are facing a result of, I dare say, ignorance? Are we not having the right people advising? Are those positions not staffed to adequately advise the minister? Are we now saying that it is more a matter of we must see the minister as one who owns the ministry per se, based on the answer he gave to the commandant, instead of, you know, looking at it what in terms of what it really is and the reality is, as I've been saying. Everyone who works in government is a servant of the state, of the Republic of Namibia. Where does the state get their money? From the taxpayer. Who are the taxpayers? That's you. You pay taxes. Where? On everything. From your salary, from what you buy in the store. All over the place, left, right, and center, you are paying tax. That goes to the state. So, you know, we have this thing in our country where we treat especially government officials that are far higher up in the structures. We treat them like royalty, like gods, really, for some. We treat them as these infallible people who should never be questioned. We treat them as though, you know, being there means that they absolutely, you know, deserve to be there. And perhaps they do. But remember, politics is a bit complicated. And definitely the more I settle into this role, the more I will dissect, you know, what I already have before me. As far as helping people to understand that you do yourself a disservice when you treat a public servant like they are supposed to be ruling over you. There's no such thing. And I repeat, up to Madam President herself, and not her personally, but her position, they are there to serve you. When you are not satisfied with certain things, you have the right to demand accountability. You have the right to question and say, why is this like this? Why is this like that? Yes, it is your prerogative. We must change. As I said earlier before, we are the land of the brave. But also we are the land of the very tolerant. Oh, yeah. Basically. We can be very, very tolerant and say, ah, it's fine, man. It's okay. Ah, it's okay, man. How will I even affect that situation? It's fine. It's okay. Los marnet. It's fine. It's fine. Just, you know what? I dare you to count. You know, it's just 12 minutes after 7 a.m. I dare you to count how many times you hear that from someone today. It's fine. It's okay. No, it's not a problem. But you look at the person's face and you can see that, no, you are not okay. But you just don't want to put in that effort to really dissect why it is that you are not fine. It's better to just move on. Maybe it is too emotionally taxing. Maybe you don't want to, you don't have the energy to deal with that matter. But realistically, we need to understand that what people are doing as far as the commoning, the people marching in Oshivarongo, is 110% not only correct, but advisable in light of what is currently happening with our government. They are doing the right things. To say that we've tried, we've written letters, we've followed the law. Now we will come and camp in front of your office. I absolutely agree with that move. Because why? We want answers. We have that right. Period. Regardless of party loyalties, once you are a minister, you are serving everyone, not just the ones who you believe have voted for you. So, ultimately, with everything we've been discussing so far since I've gotten into the studio at 6, this is what parliamentary paralysis looks like on the ground. While MPs argue about procedure, pensioners are struggling to pay their rates and taxes. While the speaker can't rule on her own removal, municipalities are failing to to serve their communities. So, the question, who is actually suffering while they debate? That is the real question that we need to dive into. Who is actually suffering while they debate? So, if you would like to give your opinion, you know we already had Uncle Bona call us in this morning. The number to dial is 083-288-401. That is 083-288-401. This is Unpacking the Day. You are hearing the voice of John J.P. Lenga here on Eagle FM. And we are trying to dissect the matters that really matter. Yes, I have scheduled for our next deep dive for us to actually have a guest with us this morning, an expert in economics. So ever since I started working here, I've come to know him by multiple names. But so far they're like Gabriel. Yeah, just go with Gabriel. As I'm looking now at my WhatsApp, the next name that you will have is Kanjengo Ka Mkwanyoka. But his real name also again is another, you think that was it, was it? But yes, he is a dear colleague. He will be joining us in a few minutes time. He specifically wants us to use Nginomwena Erastus. So he will be joining us later on. I hope he's listening. To dissect basically what is currently taking place in our economy, specifically with business confidence collapsing in Namibia. We are having less and less people borrowing. And one might think, oh, this is a good thing, right? You know, less people in debt, but no, it is not a good thing when businesses are not seeking funds, because then that means that they themselves might be either struggling or on their way out of being in operation overall. But perhaps I might be wrong. Who knows? And that's why we are going to have Mr. Nginomwena. Yes. Here in studio earlier. He says I can call him Nino. I like that. I've never had to call anyone Nino yet. So let's go with Nino. I've introduced him earlier as Gabriel. But we will speak later on, to really get into what this means for our country with, you know, an economic outlook that is already just looking a bit rough. You will have more for us. For now, if there's anyone else who'd like to call in and have themselves heard, you maybe have an opinion, maybe you have a question, the number to dial is 083-288-401. That is 083-288-401. And then in absence of that, while we continue to wait, I'll just confirm with our guest whether he is available. We will take a short break for that. See whether we can get him on the line. Hopefully he is ready. If not, we will just continue to, you know, bide some time a little bit. See how we can give him a little bit more chance to prepare, because I'm absolutely certain that you'll definitely want to hear this. All right, we'll be back very soon.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoewe ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okwene ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
All right, perfect. I hope that everything is clear to our listeners. Nino, are you there this morning? Nino, are you there? Nino?
Yes, sir.
Ah, wonderful, sir. Good morning to you. How are you?
No, it's a good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you. So I was just telling our dear listeners that I'm bringing an expert in. I hope that you are ready to expert us this morning.
Yeah, not an expert yet, but we will add something so far.
Okay, fantastic. So ladies and gentlemen, this is Nino Mwena from The Villager. He wrote the story on business borrowing. If you are a Villager regular, you will have seen it. So welcome to this show, sir.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, fantastic, man. So I prepared a few questions that, of course, I also did share with you just to make sure that we are extra super prepared. So let's just jump straight into the first one. Please, could you give us the headline numbers? How much have businesses borrowed this year compared to last?
Yeah. Perhaps we can just go a step back a bit. That why is it important, or why must be, or why is this a matter of discussion?
Mm.
Why must we be concerned about the level of borrowing coming from the business community?
Yes, please.
Why is it a thing? Why is it important? Why are these statistics being tracked? Or why must we track it as a country or as a media that focus on business reporting and business conversations?
Exactly.
Remember, we are building an economy. We want it to move to certain stages. Now, the healthy of an economy is determined or is indicated or is highlighted by various indicators. And one of the indicators is the business borrowing.
Hmm.
When businesses are borrowing, it tells you something. It gives you an indication of the direction of your economy and how things are moving.
Hmm.
Because remember, when it comes to financing an operation of a business, you can finance it in various ways. The first one is that you can put your own money. We call it the owner's equity. You put your own money. But in many cases, that just happens when you are starting. Once you start operating and the business is running, the business become a person on its own. That's how we call it, that a business becomes a person on its own, meaning that it now supposed to use its balance sheet and fund its operation. Now, to fund its operation, it can either use some money which is inside, or it can actually reach out to the commercial bank or to the asset managers or to other venture capital for funding. But in this particular case now, especially when it comes to our economy, it has been so small, and the most used funding has always been accessing capital or borrowing from the commercial banks. So that's why the Bank of Namibia track credit extended to the business community. And like I said at the beginning, that yes, when the businesses are borrowing, they are telling you something about the economy.
Yes, sir.
That is the most important thing. So this story is a story for the policymakers. It's a story for economic facilitators. It's a story for the regulators, for them to understand that how healthy is our economy? What is happening in our economy? Are the business community trusting what we are doing? Are the business community listening or buying what we are selling, really, in terms of policy formulation and the regulatory framework? So that picture will come from those numbers, those monthly numbers. Because if a business keep borrowing to fund their operation, it means they are expanding.
Yes, sir.
It means they are cementing their operation. It means they are improving. It means they want to buy more machinery. They want to employ more people. That is the picture you get when the business community are borrowing. Now, to go back now to your question.
Yes, sir.
What are the numbers saying? We have looked at for the past 7 months, January to July, just to look at the monthly borrowing. And the picture is not looking very well. The business community have borrowed around 2.2 billion. And if you compare now to the same period last year they almost borrowed 3 billion in the same space. And it's just not those two numbers. It's actually the numbers of months. Only 4 months, the business community have borrowed. The other months, they are paying them.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today.
Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
All right. Apologies for that one, Nino. We had to pay
bills. No, we have to pay the bills.
Always. Yes.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So the point is, if you zoom into these numbers, you get a picture of what is happening in your economy. And you also get to ask a question like, why are the business not borrowing? And if you look for this, for the past 4 months that the business have borrowed, only 2 months they have borrowed more than half a billion, like 500 million. Now, if you look at the size of the economy, if you look at the numbers of SMEs, if you look at so many projects that are coming out there looking for capital, then you'll be there like, okay, if we are saying that there is such a high level of entrepreneur awake in Namibia, and if you look at the conversation of needing capital, everybody's looking for capital, why are they going to get the capital? And you also have to understand that our commercial banks are quite liquid. Like, meaning there is so much money within our financial market. And this has been confirmed by the Bank of Namibia to say that's why even government is not even finding it very hard to borrow. So meaning you have a lot of capital sitting idle. And here you have the business community not borrowing. And you have emerging sectors. Remember, we have the oil and gas, we have the green hydrogen, we have the agro processing, we have the farmers. And all of them are saying, we want the capital, then why are they not borrowing? So those are now the conversation, the higher level conversation, policymakers and the regulators and all who are supposed to facilitate economic activity supposed to be answering to say, is it the cost of capital? The Bank of Namibia said, no, it's not at the high interest rate at all. So it means that the health of the economy, there is something wrong within our economy, and the business community are not really, really convinced
of the direction that we are going or the steps that we are taking. That's why those numbers are like that, and that's why those numbers are going down. And remember that the year is almost over.
Mm.
You know? So, yeah.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. Mm. Because now you already touched on this. I'll just jump straight into our next question, which is now that business borrowing is a key indicator of business confidence. You mentioned this. So I guess just to really put it to people in layman's terms, what does this drop signal? What does it mean to let us even say to the one who has never really walked in to seek a business funding or even attended conferences with other, business owners, those who just do not have that expert level knowledge that you have. What does this really mean now when people are not borrowing or in terms of business confidence specifically?
Yeah. And we did it intentionally when we did this article to say we are going to remove households. Because if you come to the private sector credit extension, meaning money given to the private sector is always business and household.
Mm.
So what we did, we removed the household. We just wanted to look specifically to the business one. And what are we communicating? Because remember, business reporting is not about covering numbers, you know? Like,
yes.
we people are just covering numbers. This is an intentional message. Because, you know, now there is a contradiction within our policymakers and everyone outside. When you say the economy is not doing well as an economist, people are going to blame you. No, either you are hating government or no. So we put the numbers straight to say, there is the picture. There is the picture. And that, what does the picture say? It says that when the business community are not borrowing, it means they are not trusting it to a certain extent,
uh-huh.
the direction you are going.
Yeah, I see.
So they are not convinced to say, remember, when you are applying for a loan, one of the basic things that they get to ask you is give us a projection of how you are going to make money.
Hmm.
That is the first thing they ask you, like, are you going to make money? Are you going to be able to pay back our
even
money?
Even want that proof of income to say, okay, no,
yes.
Are you able?
So
do you have something?
So they ask you to do a projection. Now, that the projection will come from what? You will only do that projection if you trust, if you have confidence of what is coming. If you do not have confidence, how do you do a projection?
Mm.
Because you know that this economy is not going in the direction. You will not go to the bank to borrow.
Exactly.
You will only go there if you are able to say, oh, the future looks great. I don't think the El Nino will affect me. I think that the policy, I think that government intervention, then you are able to say, oh, I'm able to make money.
Mm.
But if you was an enterprise and you looked at the prospect in the short term and medium term, and like, these things are not going well. That the policy has not been amended. Parliament have been sitting for a whole whatever. They have not even implemented a single law. They have not done that to that sector.
Mm.
Government is not yet even procuring from local. You see, so you are just there to say, I cannot borrow money because I'm unable to pay back. Not that I'm unable to pay back. We don't use the now. We use the tomorrow. That how do things look like tomorrow? And if things are looking better tomorrow, in terms of policy interventions, in terms of sectoral development, in terms of regional and things like that, you will go and borrow. That's why we say when business are borrowing, it means the what is being planned or what is coming tomorrow, they have confidence in it. So they tell a better picture because they understand all these dynamics within the economy. So for them, whenever they run to the bank to get money, it means they trust whatever we are coming up, whatever we are cooking as policymakers, whatever we are cooking as trade facilitators. But if you see them backtracking, it means whatever you guys are planning, they are not buying it. And that is very, very, very now dangerous in terms of economic movement, in terms of jobs creation, and in terms of just wealth creation. It means we are stuck.
And basically, so it would be right for me to say that why would I go and borrow money when I'm just not sure I can pay it back?
That is now very, very important. And as economic leaders, especially the policymakers, and this is very, very important, and these are the conversation that we are not having as a country. We do not look at the right indicators.
Mm.
You have the politicians and everybody on their corner, and here you have Bank of Namibia.
And if I can tell you this, do you know that these numbers are somewhere hidden in the Bank of Namibia website in an Excel sheet? Like literally you have to download the Excel sheet, add the numbers together. So it's not like this picture is painted. No. The only picture that we get a single number called the private sector credit extension. It's a percentage. And it say, it have increased by 4%. But once you go in, you are able to get the picture, the real picture. But who is now doing that one for your policymakers? And that's why now I'm saying there is a contradiction between the policymakers and the Bank of Namibia. The Bank of Namibia has the right information, but do the policymakers have it? Because you as a policymaker, you cannot make a decision based on a single number.
Exactly.
That single number cannot give you a picture of that 4%. But if you go in, you get to see that only 4 months business have borrowed. They only borrowed twice more than 500 million. And look at how big our economy is. And your business are just borrowing around 300 million, 400 million. What does it say about your economy? But you will only be able to get such a message if you have the capability, if you have the researchers to dig that information for you, so that when you go to parliament, so that when you do a submission, so that when, you know, you have this information that is actually convincing you that, colleagues, what we are doing is not enough. Why? Nobody's trusting it. That's why they are not borrowing. It means we have to change it or fix it, you know?
Yes, oh, indeed, man. And which is now even beautiful where you ended, leads us straight into our next question to say, you know, the central bank mentions manufacturing, fishing, agriculture and wholesale being the hardest hit sectors. So in your opinion, what, which are the hardest hit sectors now currently?
And if you have sectors like manufacturing, borrowing, or backtracking, if they are backtracking, because remember, some of them are just using overdraft. Overdraft is operational money. And if you see that your businesses are not doing overdraft, there is something wrong in your economy.
Oh,
if you see that the agricultural sector is not using overdraft, remember, the agricultural sector needs money. Like they run faster on money.
Yeah.
Because you need seed faster, you need fertilizer faster,
yes,
you need the refrigeration faster. So they depend mostly on overdraft. And if you see sectors like that, not a billion overdraft. And if you look at your leasing, like equipment leasing, and equipment leasing has been stuck around 10 billion. But we have all these projects that are supposed to be happening, you know?
Yeah.
But this is not hiring equipment. So it tells you a picture. If construction and manufacturing are not borrowing, are not going for overdrafts, are not leasing so much equipment, then it means there are no activities happening at the level that we want.
Sure.
So those are very, very critical sectors, construction, manufacturing, and they hire a lot of people. So those numbers really, really supposed to make us panic and ask questions. And because we have no excuse to say, no, probably they are using their own money. No, no, no. Because somebody will say they just have money and they are using their own money. No. Remember, this equipment, you get to a tender, you have to get this equipment faster. You have,
yes,
you really, really have to prove to the procurement committee that you have the capital, you have the equipment. And the agricultural sector, look, they are already planning for the summer, whatever season.
Yeah.
Winter has ended, they are preparing for the next season. So meaning this is the time actually capital is supposed to be flowing from the financial institution to the agricultural sector. But you are seeing very minimal movement within capital. And the banks have such a very huge balance sheet. We can say asset managers, we can say venture capital. The banks are more faster in terms of extending capital compared to everybody else. And when you see that their numbers are not moving as they're supposed to move, especially during this preparatory season, then there is something which is not healthy within our economy, and we need to sit down as policymakers, as regulators, and the media also need really, really to step up in terms of reporting and highlighting these type of things. High-level conversation, simplified conversation so that everybody gets to understand, so we act.
Yes. Oh, no, you really paint a stark picture there about the reality that is coming forward. You know, I love that you even mentioned El Nino. I was just seeing a headline earlier where they are saying meteorologists are saying, you know, that we are going to face a very dry rainy season. I know it sounds like an oxymoron, but it's what we are looking at. So in light of everything you've said there, yes, I hope our listeners are paying attention and really understanding the gravity of the situation of what you have just laid out there for us. So moving on to our next question. So Bank of Namibia said credit growth is lagging behind consumer price inflation, suggesting a slowdown in domestic activity. What does that mean for the average Namibian? I know you have touched on that very well, you know, before already in the previous questions. But what does that mean basically for the average Namibia, lagging behind consumer price inflation and a slowdown in domestic activity?
In simple terms, it literally just means that capital, we are not extending capital. It means the business community is not borrowing. That is in the basic simple terms. So it's a picture being painted to say capital is not going to where it's supposed to go. Because remember, it does not help you having all these savings, but the savings are not going to those one who need it. And for us as a country, it's even worse because you want to create jobs, right? You want your economy to grow. You want it to industrialize. You want to build the emerging sectors. You want your people to participate in an economy. Because remember, I cannot participate in an economy if I do not have access to capital.
Exactly.
As much as I'm a graduate, I'm a geologist, I want to go find some copper in Kunene. Because now you have the Canadian who are going to Kunene, they are finding gold and they are finding copper, but you also have Namibian geologists, but they're not doing the same thing. One of the factors is what? Because the other one have access to capital and to machinery and to technology, yours do not have. So in here domestically, you want capital to flow, capital to exchange hands, capital to go to the sector, capital to go to the entrepreneurs. That is what you want. And you do not only want it to be happening in Windhoek. You want capital to go to Zambezi where there is arable land, grazing, and farming land. You want capital to go to Kunene, which is very, very dry, because Kunene need to adapt. And they can only be able to adapt and to be resilient if those who are operating in there are able to have access to affordable capital that they can use to be able to adapt. But if you see that capital is not moving for an economy which is struggling to grow, then you have a problem.
Now
you have your inflation. The average prices are moving faster compared to how capital is moving. So meaning that goods are becoming expensive. How do you stabilize prices? You stabilize prices by one thing, not just the interest rate, but also expanding your production. And if you're expanding your product, especially the agricultural production, the output, because within our inflation, what is moving faster is what? Is food prices. Apart from fuel and others and electricity, the food prices are the problematic one. But you can solve this one because if you can expand your agricultural production. So you need capital to move. You need capital to be moving to go into sectors. It does not help for the banks to be very liquid, for you to have so much savings, and it's for you to grow your economy.
Ah, no, 100%. You know, as you were speaking now, I was just reminded of, you know, especially when you speak of you spoke of regulators earlier, and now I wonder, you know, just to move a bit away from our prepared questions, I'm just thinking, then what other regulators may be, in your view, failing to do? Because I'm looking at this guy who opened the law firm, you know, he made headlines. I cannot recall his name or the name of the law firm. I also wouldn't mention
it.
Yeah,
the one from Rundu,
Yes. And, you know, something came out eventually to say that, oh, no, but this guy, he had that capital, you know. He did get a loan and he was encouraging that people get your loans, but then it came out that, oh, he had that capital. How true that is, I don't know. But what I do know is that having taken loans before, I do know that you need to have some form of, what is the word that I'm looking for? Security, you know, for the bank to say, oh, okay, no, at least if things don't go well, you know,
we have this thing that can help us get our money back.
Yeah.
So where are we failing perhaps in that regard for our people? Because I mean, we are talking about a country that's the majority are living below the poverty line. You know, so we have these institutions that are supposed to give out money, but now then they come still and say, okay, yeah, but you want 500,000? Fine. We also need something with 500,000 first before we give it to you. So where are we failing in that regard?
Yeah. Look, yes. Remember, the capital does not belong to the bank. We all know that. And the bank needed to be very prudent and to manage the risk. Yes.
Yes.
We are not saying the bank should lend recklessly. No. What we are saying at the national level is that we need to be very, very creative and innovative so that we can move away from the traditional collateral component.
100%
we have to be innovative.
Agreed.
There are other ways within the financial sectors around the world now how we are moving toward coming up with different collaterals. Agribank is one of those ones. To say, if you work, all we want is that you have a commitment or a letter of intent from somebody who's able to take your services or to take your product. Just prove to us that you have 3 or 4 customers. That is it.
That's it.
Now, and this is one of the most crazy things.
Hmm.
Most of our farmers cannot get off takers. And they want money, they want capital. But guess what? Who is the biggest consumer? It's government. Imagine just one single school with a hostel of 400 or 300 kids.
Yeah.
And they tell a farmer that all your carrots will take them.
Yeah.
And they give that letter to that small-scale farmer. And that small-scale farmer take that letter to the bank. That is how most of these things are not rocket science, man. It's just that we have such a fragmented society with a different understanding of what is required to build an economy.
Agreed.
That is where the gaps are. That is where the differences are. You have a principal who is running a school who has no basic understanding of what needs to be done for us to build. And if all of these very important people, a councillor, because if you're a councillor of a certain constituency and you have four farmers that are operating there, you're supposed to link them to the school within your constituency. And you're supposed to tell those principals to give those intent letters. So, look, the collateral is not really, really an issue, as we keep saying. We just need to start having a conversation that what else can we use as a collateral? Because, of course, the bank have to manage the risk. We do not want the money getting lost. But we have to do it collectively because it's all about assurance. It's all about confidence that, okay, cool. Councillor, are you sure you are able to make sure that 2 schools within your constituency are going to buy from the farmer? Then the councillor said, yes, let us sign something. And when that letter is signed, that the principal is held accountable, they must turn everybody. Then that the farmer can go to the bank and get the money. So it's how the institutions are working together. We can solve the collateral matter. But if the institutions that are supposed to be off-takers are not coming on board, then you have a problem. So it's not always going to be collateral because we keep running to collateral as the main barrier. I've realized, because I spend most of the time reading this and observing and participating in this type of thing, it's not always collateral. It's the coordination among the economic facilitators.
Brilliant.
They are not having a conversation.
Hmm.
I keep giving an example. Kamango has so many green schemes. Kamango has so many small-scale farmers. But do you know that the Kavango regions are the most food insecure?
Imagine.
Look at how contradictory that is. How do you become food insecure when you have almost all the green skins?
Imagine.
That is just the dumbest thing I ever heard. Like, I'm going to say this clearly.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't, man.
You have the water, you have the river. So it's a coordination of institutions. It's a coordination of institutions. Like, government can be the off-takers of everything that's being produced. And when they are off-takers, they are even able to stabilize prices so that everybody is able to afford the prices. So it's a coordination of institutions and the lack of understanding of how do we build an economy? How do we support our enterprises to de-risk them from certain things? So the conversation needs to happen. But unfortunately, those conversations are just happening in Windhoek.
Yeah.
All the seminars, all the investment seminars, they're only happening in Windhoek. Nothing is happening in Rundu, nothing is happening in Korenkuru, where we can actually have proper conversations and presentation to say, we produce this.
Yes.
How do we make sure the food does not go to waste?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's those conversations that are supposed to happen all over the country and making everybody understand that this is how we build the economy. It's not about prayers, like you guys are going to hold the prayers. No, that doesn't help those who do not help themselves. No. It's a matter of sitting down and making everybody understand that you cannot tell us that you want the jobs to be created by who. You are the constituency councillor. You are the chairperson of your constituency. Coordinate your entrepreneurs. Coordinate the institution that you have. Develop the value chain and the supply chain within.
Mm.
So those are the hard conversations that our leaders, yeah, some of them are unable to have it because most of your councillors and governors graduated, people who shout this shit. So, but again, regardless, we have to start having such type of conversation. So we stop saying, no, it's the collateral. No, the banks want money.
Hmm.
We just need to be innovative and very supportive of our entrepreneurs so that we can make them bankable. They can be bankable. It's just that we need to assist them to be able to be bankable so they can get the capital.
Ah, very, very brilliant, man, Mr. Erastus. Mm-hmm. Very brilliant. Mm-hmm. And you already started touching here on what will be our last question. But before I throw it, you know, your way, I absolutely agree with you, you know, where we are centering all these talks in this here concrete mm-hmm. jungle of ours in Windhoek. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, we will have the directors, the governors, you know, of all these the organizations, ministries, agencies, what have you, representing the government, traveling to Windhoek to come and have this swakop, for goodness sake. You are actually very, very, I have to match your energy there to say you are going to swakop to discuss things that should be happening back in the north, in the south, all the way there in the arm, you know, with the likes of Zambezi. And sometimes these people go there and end up sleeping. Go return back to the region. And you know, how are you going to apply anything? You just have no concern. You know that your salary will arrive anyways at the end of the month. So trying to be, as you said, innovative. I think this was the key term that you said, because initially, you know, this offshoot question was around, you know, as you said, with, collateral and such, and you said no, it's not that deep. We need to be innovative. So thank you so much for that. I hope our listeners have definitely taken something away. I definitely have. I cannot actually wait. We need coffee. I think you are going to help me become a very rich man someday. Mr.
We have to help one another, bro. Like, look, I keep saying this, the in terms of how we think nowadays, it's no more about going to school. No, going to school gave us nothing. But like what you have said, if we can move this conversation to, I'm telling everybody right now that, guys, Kunene is going to be in trouble. Omsat is going to be in trouble because they are the first one to be hit by all these drought things.
Yeah.
But how many seminars and conferences do you hold in Opuo just to tell people about this climate change? How many?
And that's a
because
brilliant
they
example.
Are the most affected one. Their lifestyle depends on livestock. We have not assisted them to transition and to start transitioning from a different lifestyle.
Mm.
How many seminars and conferences do you have in Kunene about the climate change?
Mm-hmm.
None. None. So then we expect the people to adapt. So we really, really needed to start thinking differently, and we needed to move away from window conversation so we can take the conversation to the ground.
Yeah.
We needed to go have that conversation in Ochiro, in Oshidemba, in whatever language you can have, the basics of these people start adapting.
Brilliant.
Otherwise, when they are going to go hungry, then we say they are lazy. No, it's a lifestyle of theirs, and they cannot just switch it like that. So we have to make them resilient and adapt. And again, like you have BBN, which is a climate change type of loan and things like that. Mm. How do we make them able to access a type of capital? Did we create such type of awareness to them? So the conversation need to move beyond Windhoek, because in Windhoek, we are just talking to one another.
Yeah.
But the real people who are affected by the climate change, the El Nino, are going to be the one within there in the villages where they depend on agricultural matters. So we really, really need to start moving away from just having conferences in Windhoek, but also to move to the ground and to have proper conversations. How do we make our people adapt? How do we make them resilient? How do we make them to participate in an economy beyond just at the substance level? Because if you look at one of the articles which was in the village, you say that all those that are involved in agriculture, almost more than 80, they're just doing it for it to eat.
Mm.
Not at the commercial level. How do we tell them that you can actually sell or produce more and sell?
Possessing already the asset, which is land, even.
Or something, yeah.
Mm.
So we needed to move beyond it. Otherwise, when you have a whole population of more than 300 households that are participating in agriculture, but 80% of them are just doing it for their own stomach, and then you can see that the commercial understanding or the value of agriculture is not appreciated beyond our subsistence farming.
Ah, beautifully put, Mr. Rastus. Then let's just go straight on to our next question. So then, you know, you were already once again touching brilliantly on this, on the last part of the last question, but what needs to happen to restore business confidence, in your opinion, then?
Okay. There are so many things that we need to do, and unfortunately, they need to happen parallel.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that so many people are so picking up. These things needed to happen at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, we are no more saying that government should spend money. No, we are saying that if we are going to change a law, make sure that other things are also in place, meaning that we have to move together in these particular things. Because it does not only help CRAN change a certain act, but the municipality are still not able to give land.
Mm.
Okay, government decided to procure, but electricity is expensive. Mm. So you see, we cannot only move one piece. We have to move probably four or five pieces at the same time for us to have an impact.
Indeed.
We have to address the cost of our energy in a country, address the cost of energy because it's affecting production. You have to amend and change certain laws. You have to make the procedures and the process of accessing capital very easier. How we assess risk, we have to make our entrepreneurs bankable, meaning that there are certain things that we can do to link them to off-takers so they can access capital. So meaning it's a couple of things that need to be done together. No more doing one thing. Mm. We have realized that if you just move one piece, it does not have an impact. Once all these things are now moving at the same time, the confidence begins.
Mm-hmm.
The confidence begins. So, and also in our communication, we can see that there are so many things happening within our economy, but it's how we communicate.
Yeah.
Either government communicate late, or it's a press release just sent out that is it. We are not creating the necessary confidence because we are not sharing the right information. There are so many agreements about China and Namibia on the zero tariff.
Yes.
When you are saying that means there is access to the Chinese market, where is the awareness?
Yes, absolutely.
Where is the awareness? Which product can enter the Chinese market? Because I'm only able to start producing more when I know that my product is able to get to China. But did we tell people in Kavango are producing? Did mm-hmm. we tell the people in Zambezi? So, the information that we are sharing about economic opportunities is really, really, really bad.
Yeah.
100%. And this is now MIME, this is now MIRT. We are not communicating beyond WINDEC.
Mm.
Because there are opportunities that are emerging, but how do we communicate it? And this is why now economic and the business radio are so very important. But I know also the limitation of our reporters and others. Because most of the things that are going out there are just bad information, accident, corruption, those are the most reported things.
Yes.
But when it comes to business opportunities, like the zero tariff that I'm referring to, that information is not circulating in Konene. Nobody know about it in Umsati.
Mm.
Nobody know about it. The small-scale farmers at Tunda do not know that, so that they can produce. No. But they know how many accidents happened. They know who stole what. They know the fights in Parliament. That is the information they are all getting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's
from
also
the sensationalist, you know,
business,
reporting,
yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So we need to improve in business reporting and economic reporting so that we're able to articulate this business opportunity so to our people on the ground who want to work beyond WINDEC. So If we can do that, and also parallel to that, we change whatever needs to be changed, especially in terms of policies, local authority matters, accessing land, and also making energy more affordable so that everybody who want to do something can participate. Yeah.
Yeah, so ultimately we need to also just look at stimulating the economy, as you said, in parallel, you know, with these parallel tracks, but all of them having stimulation with coordination ultimately taking place. Yeah.
Yeah, we are doing bad in communicating, in coordinating. We are doing so bad. It's like we have such a big country, bro, but it's so small, but we are just not communicating to one another. That's what I can see. NIPDB is doing that. MIRT is doing that. The mine is doing that. The fishery is doing, everybody's on their own.
Mm.
But if we could coordinate and make some of these things collectively, the impact is bigger.
We
can learn something
agree.
From MTC. We can learn something from MTC, like MTC, how they pulled that their social corporate responsibility and bringing everybody in. And even in their internship where they bring in other corporate to add money, we really, really need to work together if we're going to make these things very impactful and to enable to support more. Now you have NIPDB as a youth fund. The government is their own youth fund. DBN is a youth fund. It's just a whole mess. No, we can pull resources together and just do this thing. But now everybody has their just a little thing. Everybody has their little thing. So the impact is not so huge. But if we can collectively come together, I think the impact can be huge and we can create the necessary confidence within the economy.
No, I 100% agree with you. You know, when you just mentioned there about all these different funds that are now available, and yet everyone is reporting that no one is lining up to apply. You know, so it just comes back to, you know, now we've overwhelmed the people. Someone who doesn't even know how to apply for one now has options to apply for six, and they don't know where to start still. So I love that one.
We are everywhere, bro. We are everywhere, but nowhere. It's a mess. But
yeah.
Man, I hope. By step by step, but time is going though.
Yes.
Time is really, really, really going. And I feel like we have not achieved anything for this year, apart from the many, many conferences that we have done.
Yeah.
And I hope probably by next year, no more conferences, no more seminars, but
action.
We just started to do something, the actions, and we review and we revamp whatever we have in place.
Yeah.
And we also work together and coordinate better. Yeah.
No, my brother, you know, I really do believe that as we continue to do more of this, I myself have been thoroughly educated and I've been enriched, and I cannot wait for the next time that we do more of this. Thank you so much, not just for the article, for being here today. This analysis was not just important, it was needed. So, yes, man, we have been listening to Mr. Nginomwenwa Vali Erastus. Thank you so much for your time. Sir, is there anything else you would like to add?
We need to continue having the business conversation talks.
Mm.
Radios are still the best form or the best tool to educate people.
Yes, sir.
I know it's a cultural mindset. We have to still convince people that the business conversation, the economic conversation are very, very important. We have a long way. But I think economic reporting and economic analysis are the only tool that we can use to change the mindset of our people and to invite them to participate in the economy beyond just being vendors and beyond just being a Tokuliangava stop and shop. But to go in now further, we can only do it through the education that we do on radio. So thank you for having me.
You know, you are very welcome, and I cannot wait for us to do this again. Have a wonderful day, sir.
All right, sir.
Yeah, goodbye.
All right. That was Nginomwenwa Vali Erastus, also known as Gabriel around here. He said I must not call him that one, but I will did it anyways. We very much appreciate, I feel very enriched. He was trying to be very humble in the beginning, saying that he's not an expert. I feel expected. He has expected us. Suddenly I realize or see so many avenues that I need to look at that we have been missing. And I thoroughly agree with, I don't think there's anything that I disagreed with, throughout the about 30 minutes that we've had him here on air. You know, we really have an issue with regards to, and perhaps, I don't know, Maybe, is it our executives? Maybe everyone is trying to be the guy who, you know, rescues the country and, you know, looks like someone who has really made a difference with all the various issues we are facing, whether it be unemployment, whether it be as we look now with, you know, the borrowing going down. You know, there's just so much taking place. And so one wonders what happens at these conferences. What really happens, whether it's private or public sector? What is really taking place? Because in a nation such as ours, you know, as Mr. Erastos mentioned, we are a small country. Yes, it is big physically. But, you know, when we look at the dynamic of how we interact with each other, we are a very small country. You know, the question really has to come to, are we competing with one another? What is taking place? We have a call coming in. Caller, you are live, Eagle FM. Talk to me.
You know, Sir John.
Yes, sir. Who am I talking to and where are you calling from?
This is Gabriel from Windu.
Yes, Mr. Gabriel. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, my brother.
Good, good.
Oh, another name. Did I use Gabriel because of maybe Kajewo was living now?
Yeah. Is it that the Mandume? Yeah, I thought you sounded too familiar, man. I was like, why are you Gabriel also today? So you're just like my brother. talk to me, sir.
You know, my brother, why some of us were grown to Eagle FM? Yeah, because there are so many information, we cannot get it anyway.
Yeah, ne?
Yeah, I'm telling you. That's why we are enlightened to everything what is happening in the country. Where we are heading, where we are come from. So if you ever obtain that information, and always they say information is the key, which we are getting from Kanjeva and the others who are coming through.
Oh yes, and the guy knows his stuff, man. If you, I hope you were also listening them. The man really knows what he's talking about.
He touch all the aspects which is supposed to be. I'm telling you, things we need to improve in this country. And then when we are looking at our position. The thing is that they are talking every day, they're talking like a Roman. You just imagine a person is telling you, we need to do this, but he's the one in charge. Why are you saying we need? He said, just now, I give a directive that next year or next month, we are going to work backward. Then everybody must work backward. Serious. Because now we are having a minister who's just also suggesting. And that's the problem we have in this country. Just imagine even now the president is talking about what? We need to get away from our own and so on. Yes, a good thing, but there must be a policy. That
agreed.
Anybody who is going to contravene this law, who is going to contravene this law, this is the consequence going to be. That's how it is. But if you are just talking, sake of talking, people, they do what they used to do. Because some of them, they get used to, after 6 years, just imagine, a person is still in the same position. You become so comfortable. But if they would be like, this is the consequence when you are, you contravene this law, then everybody starts behaving.
I agree with you 100%. You must enforce what you are trying to preach somehow. Yeah, very much. We cannot just say this must happen and then we leave it there. 100% agree.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know when Kanjong is talking about even the local council? Yes, the local council is the person who is supposed to be settled to. The local council are always the thing they need to take a directive from somebody have to suggest to them. For them to act on a certain thing. You can see even when I was, I think it's this program we've been talking about, the kids walking, how many 10 kilometers to go to school in Kawango. Just imagine, a kid will have to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning to go to school. Come back from school, leave your home 6 o'clock in the afternoon. Just imagine. Just imagine after 6 years, in that Kavango, there's a what? There's a governor. this education, what do you call this director?
Yeah.
Now you want to tell me that you, as a minister, cannot ask these people what they've been doing. Because some government, they even repeat for 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the director who've been there for more than even 20 years.
Yeah.
But we have a local councillor who's there, but he doesn't know his job. Because if I was a councillor, I'm supposed to call these people to the meeting. Then summon them, because now you call them, then you call the education minister. You call even the governor if he's been there before you. Because the governor, what is going on here? I'm trying to improve my people's life. But can you just give me the budget to build a school so I can cut off my kid going to school? Because you can see there's a lack of school. Why a person is walking for more than 10 kilometers to go to school? But as a counselor, you want to hear from the governor. You want to be given a task from the Minister of Education. But sometimes this is thing which you need to wake up.
Oh, very
and then
much.
That's what I'm always, yeah, this is what I'm always asking. But, how did this former counselor of Kachari used to get his thing right?
Hmm.
I'm telling you, everybody's approaching that man. Even though now it's so shameful that Swapo didn't recognize that gentleman.
Hmm.
Because up to now he's about to even have a portfolio. Even the ambassador. Portfolio. It will be okay with him.
You know, even...
But that somebody calls so competent and then you leave it that way. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes and then I'm looking in the opposition party. I'll grab this guy.
Hmm.
Seriously. No matter what.
You know that the Mandumi... That the Mandumi, yeah. As you're speaking now, you are reminding me of, you know, that thing that happened just a few months ago, that standing parliamentary committee who went to find in Okahao, the guy who is supposed to be managing the books does not even have any accounting qualification whatsoever. And as you were speaking, I just remembered that, and now I ask myself, how regularly is this happening across our country, you know?
Many. Go to Elana Fiji, you'll be surprised. The position was supposed to be headed by Addison. It's headed for somebody who doesn't even have any grade at all.
Imagine.
And I'm telling you. And the people who are, some of them in the office, they're eating up those money because that person is just in contract for more than even 20 years. After contract, because it does, you know, when you are having contract, you don't get so much benefit.
Yeah.
And it's what they are doing, most of them, in town council.
Yeah, and you know...
I'm telling you, what... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you raise actually a very important point here, you know, especially now when, you know, when what he was saying earlier to say, we are not coordinating. But now we are also seeing, you know, with what you are saying, what is now coming out with proof, it's verifiable that, you know, there are people in positions, they don't have the qualifications for it. Like a tree on top of an elephant, you are wondering, how did that person get there? And at the end of the day, who suffers? It's the people, it's the kids who have to walk, you know, up and down to school. Before the sun is up, they are walking. When the sun is setting is the time they are reaching home. Mm. At what point do they really give their best, not only to school, yeah, and to even live their lives and to their communities as well?
Exactly. And this is the problem we are always talking about. And I'm telling you, when you have the people there and then people in the ground, because sometimes we just look at the Minister of Education, but I know she's failing, but there's nothing come through that. Yes, there's a school happening, something happening. Until the media. Only the media was coming through. When the media reports, someone even started denying it. But it's a truth. Where we see even the kids killing the chairs to go to school. I'm telling you, just imagine. Eh? And the Kavango is one of the what? A lot of artisans when it comes to carpentry or woodworkers. Eh? What are you doing? Why we not even put a factory there? Minister of Trade, Minister of what? Work and Transport. Why we not do something there? Yeah, the check can be made in Kabango to supply the whole four region.
Yeah.
That's the problem, I think. The problem which we are having here, not money, it's not a human resource. No, it's our thinking, the absence of our leaders. We have a leadership crisis.
And you're now saying the same thing that was said before by Mr. Erastus, to say innovation, we don't have it. Because we just keep saying there's no money, but then when the financial year ends, you are returning millions of dollars back to the government coffers.
That is the problem. But the people, that's why we've seen the people are scared of to be borrowed, is that, okay, let them say now I'm having a farming, like the guy was a beneficiary from farming pig. He farm his pig, now the pig are growing to be sold, where is he going to sell it?
Yeah.
You end up going to sell it to Namika with a Benfield at a stop shop. Because a school which is, near you or hostel, they are not even able to come to buy from you. They are going to the South African retailers. And South African retailer, what they do? The production will be more increased than that side.
Of course.
More employment is going to be created that side. Yeah, you see now. That's the problem. It's what I'm saying. I think as a Namibian from the north, we must also stop importing the meat from this side.
Agreed.
It need to be. Yeah, it need to. Because the moment we stop, the more production. I'm telling you, people can come up with it. Even like now, I heard your boss is having what? The grass with again. And we are heading even to the what? Drought situation.
Yeah.
So if more production are happening like that in the grass where you can just go and buy the grass and feed your animal, and they were able to sell some two or three or four, my friend, that's the only starting point. Because now we are waiting for somebody to die, somebody to get married, to sell our cattle. That's not economical at all. That's the problem. That's why today we are having a tatekulu who is what? Having a lot of cattle, but they don't have teeth. Because it's waiting for somebody to die. Or somebody to get married. That's the problem. But if you're having a market day, that's why people in this side, they are able to accelerate in the market, because they're having opportunity. You take your four free cattle to sell it. Maybe you're having a breakdown of the machinery, like a borehole.
Yeah.
Umbola.
Yeah.
You are even able to get maybe 80,000 or 100,000.
Yeah.
Huh? No. My friend, this cattle, well, your cattle is big. The guys tell you, no, I'll give you only 6,000 or 7,000. What else you can do? You just have to sell it. But it's not enough even for school. If you're having two kids which are going to be registered into one of the institutions.
Exactly.
No, we need to start doing what is supposed to be done. Quickly, that will round up. You see, when we started with our speaker, for me, I think the speakers can just chill out now. Even herself can just flow the tower. Seriously, it's enough. We appreciated that time which is been done. She was a prime minister. She was a minister of finance. Yes, it's okay. We're done. You've done your part. Can you just even follow your tower yourself before you voted out? Because sometimes I don't understand, especially when it comes to African leaders. They are so greedy to give to the next person opportunity. She been there. What has she done? Even in that time when she know that she's been demoted, like to go to speaker, she said about to leave. But a person just want to, I know I'm going to go to a job. Enough is enough. Give her that opportunity to other people. Okay, Michael, let me give other people a chance.
All right, Tate Mandume. Always a pleasure to hear from you, man.
All right, my brother.
Have a good day, sir.
Same to you.
Yeah, well.
All right, that was Tate Mandume giving us his opinions there. And at the very end, he touches on what we have spoken of for about the first hour and a half of today's show here with Unpacking the Day regarding the Speaker of Parliament. And, you know, one thing I will say, last week, I will remind you that I took the time to really give us a bit of a background to understand the context of Speaker Madam Sara Kuhongelwa Madira. To say that she has a very good-looking CV. The legacy is good. It's very good. But sometimes you stay in a place and overstay your welcome. To the point that no matter what you have done and and she has contributed a lot to this nation. Make no mistake. Make no mistake. But you listen to what Tate Mandume was saying there at the end to say, like, now, after all that, this is now just going to spoil your reputation, your legacy, your CV even. Not to say that she will go look for work. I'm sure she's fine. I'm quite certain that she's okay in that regard. But just to say, after such a long and illustrious career, at the very end, it's going to show that no people forced you out of your job. You know, I don't think anyone would really want to go down that road. And I really urge you, if you have that bit of time, you know, for those who are starting maybe at 8, if you're still having your coffee, do a bit of Googling into the history of Ms. Sara Kuhongelwa Madila, the current Speaker of the Parliament of the National Assembly of the August House. And you will see that even if you don't like her, you will have to respect her. So it is very much unfortunate where, you know, the situation is now at, where it is ending up, to have what one can say are your colleagues basically saying, you are the reason we are not moving. Please, you must go, even if we must use the rules of this very house itself to get rid of you. We want you out. And I would agree with Tate Mandume to say, you know, at some point you must just be willing to say, you know what? It's not about me. If what benefits the people, which is the deliberations in the August House, cannot take place, and all across the headlines is just my name, somewhere really one must be able to look and realize and say, now it has become my show. And to whose benefit at the end of the day? You know, we are talking about several months. No ordinary bill has been passed since this 8th parliament, you know, has commenced. It is astonishing. It is unprecedented. And then it's just leading from one unprecedented thing to another. It's like we are breaking records for the wrong reasons now. And again, there are always those who want to say, yeah, no, but, you know, it's also happening elsewhere. But, okay, who cares? We are worried about what's happening here in our house. Let the neighbors do what they want to do. We want to know what is happening here on the ground. And how long will this situation remain, realistically? You know, Parliament recommences tomorrow. I myself for sure will definitely be watching to see how things proceed. With the hope that everyone keeps a level head. Should the motion proceed, how will that be taking place? I'm not here to lie to you. I'm not sure exactly how that process works. We'll reach out to our contacts in Parliament. Perhaps we will even have them here on air. You know, you heard me playing around trying to figure out how to get the calls before officially having, you know, on air. You know, you could hear me still talking through the ad playing. So as I settle in to this seat and this mic that is before me, rest assured, we will try to make sure that you get all the perspectives. I hope that everyone enjoyed what we got from our guest earlier, the expert, not expert on economics, writing the article of the borrowing that is slowing down in Namibia. I, for one, was definitely, I repeat, I have been enriched thoroughly, whether it's with knowledge, whether it's with perspective. It is indeed one of those things that I hope we can continue to do, not just with him, but with a variety of people. So, yes, it is now 8:26 a.m. The sun is shining. The wind is still winding. I can see the leaves blowing on the branches, you know, as I sit here in the studio. But it looks like a beautiful day. You know, if you are that type of person, I mean, guys, things are hard enough. You know, we have to enjoy the little bit that we can. I definitely look forward to once I'm done here, getting to sit outside a bit, maybe have a little bit of tea, you know, just decompress with the thoughts, look at what is going to happen tomorrow. But for now, here with Unpacking the Day, let us take a short break. And after that, we will get into our last deep dive for the day. We will be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwala onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijabo hili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Hatatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the I.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my cataclysm.
Need some help with the groceries this month? And YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
I was telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my...
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, citizens, Namibians, and everyone else who just happens to be listening and does not fit that ambit, welcome back. It is now 8:30. You are on Unpacking the Day. This is the voice of John J.P. Lenga, and we are about to dive into our final segment of today's show. Now, you know, I like to believe I'm very welcoming. Yeah, so I'll get into this, but if there's anyone who perhaps has been listening since 30 minutes ago, since an hour ago, perhaps since we started the show, and maybe this is the only time that you found an opportunity, you are still more than welcome to dial in. The number to dial is 083-288-401. That is 083-288-401. So, as we proceed, we will be getting into our final deep dive of the day. A nation's priorities, malaria, medicine, and the cost of inaction. Malaria. From 12,000 to 122,000 cases in a year. Let me give you the numbers, because they tell a devastating story. in 2020, Namibia recorded 13,889 confirmed malaria cases, with 1,159 hospital admissions and 43 deaths. Okay, you're with me? 13,889 confirmed malaria cases, 1,159 hospital admissions, and 43 deaths. Now, that's 2020. 2021, 13,814 cases, less than the previous year. 684 admissions, once again, less than the previous year. And 15 deaths, far less than the previous year. Then we have 2022, 11,918 cases, far less than the previous year. 673 admissions and 35 deaths. So we can see that the deaths increase there. But again, the hospital admissions are lower than in 2021. Now let's proceed. In 2023, 13,722 cases. So we start to see a rise again. 1,037 hospital admissions, the highest since 2020. But still lower than 2020, and 32 deaths. In 2024, 12,003 confirmed cases and 31 deaths. Okay? Very good. All right. Now, listen to this. We did not even go higher than 14,000 at any point, right? 2021 being the highest. In fact, 2020 being the highest, 13,889. Okay. Here comes 2025. Boom. 95,729 cases. Guys, your guess is as good as mine as to why it's happening. 154 deaths. An increase of more than 80,000 cases in a single year. This year, the country has recorded 122,612 cases and 122 deaths, at least lower than last year. But my goodness, that is still very high. This is the worst outbreak since 2020. And based on the cases that we are looking at, it's getting worse compared to last year. Because last year we were still at 95. By this year we have broken into the six-figure numbers, 122,000 cases. Health Minister Esperance Louw-Indal said, and I quote, Namibia experienced an unusual spike in malaria cases, particularly in the northern part of the country, unquote. But you see, dear people, here's the problem. The Ministry of Health's own review found that malaria surveillance and diagnosis systems were working, with all suspected cases at public health facilities being tested. Listen to this again. After all these devastating numbers I've given you, their own review found that malaria surveillance and diagnosis systems were working. So, the problem is not diagnosis. The problem is prevention. The review found problems with the planning and implementation of malaria prevention programs. Indoor spraying has remained below the World Health Organization's minimum target of 85%. The review also found gaps in the distribution and use of insecticide-treated mosquito nets, the management of mosquito breeding sites, and mosquito monitoring. Health Minister Louw-Indal says diagnostic and case management protocols remain strong. But, and I said this last week as well, but if protocols were strong, they would translate into efficacy in practical application. Simple English, if the protocols are working, that means also then when we apply in practice, we will not have this problem. 40% spraying coverage tells a very, very different story based on what the health minister is currently saying right now. Then we come to the recurring crisis of medicine shortages. In May, the Ministry of Health reported that national pharmaceutical stock levels stood at about 60%. That is 60% below the ministry's target of at least 80%. 80%. So that is the ministry's target. They are at least 20% below target, they say. But let's keep going. Mental health patients at Oshakati, Engela, Okahanja state hospitals were reportedly left without medication in June. In June, the ministry cancelled orders for pharmaceutical and clinical products worth 44.8 million Namibian dollars after suppliers failed to deliver the medicines to the central medical stores. So at least in this regard, I must just add a comment to say, at least money didn't go to someone and then we were botched, you know. The cancelled orders included medicines for mental illness, cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, chronic conditions, and serious bacterial infections. And, you know, based on the reports, I can recall, you know, one that ruffles a lot of feathers. Ngipudilo Yashindi. She has been making so much noise about this. Even her herself would say, oh, these people are so bothered by my lungus. Yet, it is those same lungus that have been making noise about this specifically to say, for example, let's just look at there not being no medicines for mental illness. It is a very fair thing to say if there are no medicines for the same people who can become, you know, let's just make it simple and say crazy. But if we can get more technical and sensitive to say, you know, they cannot be in their right mind without the required medication. So if they go and act out, who do we blame now? If they harm someone, if they harm themselves, if they cause damage to property, who do we now hold accountable? Especially when this person is able to say, I suffer from ABC and I usually require medicine. I am not in a very good economic financial position, but of course the medicine is dispensed by the state. The only problem is the clinic, the hospital is telling me that they have run out. But that's just the first one that I had mentioned, right? Cancer, no cancer medication. No diabetes medication. One can only wonder. Let me continue first. High blood pressure, chronic conditions, and serious bacterial infections. All these were lacking at the central medical stores. These are very serious illnesses. These are very, very life-threatening conditions. Without the proper medication to deal with myself, I have an aunt who has dealt with diabetes. I have seen before my own eyes how quickly the situation can change for someone like that. And you rush him to the hospital just to be told, sorry, there's no medicine. At least if you are perhaps lucky, you know, one of the questions people have been asking on the social media streets is, you know, as people try to defend the ministry, first thing that some would say, and I think is very astute of them, that's just plain critical thinking, is to say, now how come the private institutions are not struggling with these problems? And I also put that to you out there. Perhaps you are listening. Perhaps you'd like to call in and set the record straight. Maybe I'm being a bit misinformed. The number to dial is 083-288-401. That is 083-288-401. Let us know. Maybe we have the wrong information at hand currently. So, Minister Luvinda herself has acknowledged the severity of the problem. She said, and I quote, for the past two financial years, the service level at the central medical stores. Yes, please excuse me. So I was quoting the minister, Lovin Dao, where she says, for the past two financial years, the service level at the central medical stores has been less than 57%, falling short of our required target of a minimum of 80%. And it is at this point I just like to note that, you know, when questions were being asked initially earlier this year, the number given was 60%. Now, in her own words, now we hear less than 57%. Ladies and gentlemen, without compromising, my dear colleagues in the field, and we are not just talking about just anyone, we're talking about actual doctors. As I said, I was very fortunate enough to have the opportunity to do Yango in Oshakati Ongwediva for most of this year before coming here to Windhoek with this role. And I will continue doing it, by the way. It's just a wonderful way to connect with people. And a lot of the doctors would tell me that those numbers are actually much higher than what is being reported or what is being given to the public. Much lower, rather. Like, we are talking, one of the doctors told me, no, talk maybe about 40%. That seems more closer to the reality. And as I said, initially the report said, no, it should be 80%, it's 60%. Now we have the minister telling us less than 57%. Those with ears to hear, ne, can put it together to say, what does less than 57% mean exactly? Because less than 57% could mean any number between, literally any number between 1% and 56%, because she says less than 57%. So there's definitely a question here to transparency, and it's very concerning why these numbers must vary like this. Why, in fact, it must be stated as such. It feels tricky. It feels like someone's getting advice from a lawyer. You know, the type of advice your lawyer would give you when they say, no, don't say it like that. It sounds bad. Yeah, just say it like this instead. That is what it appears like to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh. But I also believe that I'm just being truthful. If you have anything to add, I know very much we are not going to hear much from the health practitioners, your nurses, your paramedics, your doctors, not here on air, unless you are very, very, very brave. I can think of a guy who has resigned not even more than a week ago. Put it on Facebook. I will definitely have to look him up. I think he will have a lot to tell us. Not being under the ministry anymore, he's free. You know, working in government is such a challenge because you can be held accountable even if what you reveal to the public is true. There are so many oppressive laws, actually, that do not protect, especially if, I guess in this case, we can say the whistleblowers. And, you know, it just reminds me now that the Whistleblowers Act is also one of those bills that I think the Whistleblowers Act has. It's now almost 10 years that it is just also hanging in limbo. But let's get back to our health situation, yeah? So Minister Lovin Dao attributed the shortages to a lack of long-term procurement contracts, global supply chain disruptions, increased demand for pharmaceuticals, changing disease patterns, and limited storage and warehousing capabilities. But she went further. She revealed how middlemen were allegedly pocketing 450 million Namibian dollars to procure medicine worth only 100 million Namibian dollars, for example. So 450 million dollars Namibian for 100 million Namibian dollars worth of medicine. That's a 350 million Namibian dollar gap. She has since moved to cut out middlemen and procure directly from manufacturers, potentially saving 221 million Namibian dollars. I recall this being reported in mainstream news outlets all over the place because, you know, we have seen what she does say is indeed true. There were middlemen who were just benefiting profusely. It was shocking to see that life-saving medication being sold at an incredible markup. We are talking 200-300%. You know, someone profiting, and a lot of the time, you know, they might even arrive late. You know, these consignments. It's honestly very irritating to think about. It really is. So, yes, she made this move to say, no, we will be securing directly from the suppliers, cutting out the middlemen. But now the problem is the situation still stands. She has since moved to cut out middlemen, right, and procure directly from manufacturers, as I just said, potentially saving 221 million Namibian dollars. But the ACC is investigating allegations that 9 health ministry officials colluded with Namibian tenderpreneurs to rig medical tenders and manipulate orders worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Dear listeners, did you catch that one? Let's take this call. Caller, you are live. Eagle FM, talk to me.
Morning once again, John.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How is the morning treating you so far?
So far, so good.
100%.
It's like our colleagues today, they're not calling or they're blue Monday.
Yeah. You know, we have to accept that sometimes the weekend was too heavy, man. The brain is still getting started, and you know.
Some of us we are stress free. I don't know when even.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, even though I'm disappointed about our team, man. You know, man, African Star, they lost all. That is showing that our level of football. Somewhere where we need to do better.
I believe it will get there. I think somehow I can see that we are on the right trajectory. And, yeah, we are getting there slowly but surely.
Yeah, very much. Hey, African Cup qualifier is coming and we are not yet even playing our game at home. That's one of the problems we always say, guys. But, not even one department will say, oh, in our country, we are doing better.
Yeah, I'm telling
that,
you.
That is another topic of another day. Okay. Now, when you go to Minister of Health, the Minister of Health, my friend, to tell you the truth, yeah, I think the lady, you cannot just end them. Because this is need somebody to worry. Know what it's doing. They like of master. Not just like I'm promoting or whatever. I think Bernard Aufi was losing that post. He was the best candidate we have so far in that Minister of Health. But if you look now, man, how many times people are complaining about the snow medicine in Australia? I'm telling you. There's even a video circulating in the social media at one of the clinic, Awananda. My friend, just imagine more than maybe 50 or 60 patients lining up to see only one doctor. I'm talking about in window. This is not outside
imagine.
Of window. I'm telling you. Then you wonder, Kutia. And they remember, the clinic is crossing the ward, 5 o'clock. And that person who took that video is somewhere around what? I think after lunch.
Yeah.
And you may end up not getting a doctor. Yeah? But you can prefer to go to the doctor. But some of them, they will never come back tomorrow.
Of course.
Yeah, for follow-up.
I'm already sick now. I must come and stand again in the line for the second day.
Again, the case. What I'm telling you, no, guys, when we're having a minister, having a nice speech, nice English, talking a good English, it doesn't make it that she's doing something. The thing is that the ground is not okay at all. I'm telling you, people are even, it was somewhere reported that the people are even when they are in the theater, they are using their own what, cell phone.
I heard. Oh, yes, yeah, the flashlight so that they can see.
Yeah, flashlight, yeah.
Just to think of that, it's embarrassing.
Ah, guys, man, no, man.
Ay, 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 ay.
What I'm telling you is that, no, things are not okay in our country. And we need the logical leader in the ground. We need people like the late Abraham Yambo.
Hmm.
They better know, but see, and the people can see it.
Ay, may he rest in peace, man.
Exactly.
I remember him very well. You know, he was the type of man, I think, especially when we started paying attention to him, Dr. Yambo would even, when he was Minister of Education, he goes to a school with camera, no announcement. He says, I want to see what's happening on the ground. You know, reports, we can write very fancy reports. And as you are saying, we can speak very fancy English and make things seem fine.
Yeah, like everything is working well.
Mm.
Telling you, things are not okay in the minister now. Well, if people can be fired, that is supposed to be the first one on the line, and the minister of later. Those, they ended their youth, but they are not really doing anything. Seriously. Apart from seeing them on the TV and so on.
Yeah.
But when you come to the ground, there's nothing wrong. Just imagine, there's no medicine for people who are having HIV. There's no medicine for me, who's having heart pressure.
Yeah, no man.
Yeah. Yeah, people are dying, but we are still just talking.
Yeah.
Nothing happening. Yeah. Just imagine Mekulu is going there for the whole month and Mekulu didn't get a medicine for heart pressure. And he's already having a lot of issue when it comes to health because he's old.
Yeah.
Ah, guys, man, no. No, no, no. Then now we have a leader saying, no, I'm having a sleepless night. That I'm president now. The president in the night battle, left and flying out and left and right.
Huh?
But you're having a situation which is happening in your hand, but you are not really going logical to go and face the prison. I'm telling you, those things when you are heading, sometimes make you sick, my friend, in your stomach. Because we can see, we are interacting with these people every day.
Yeah.
Huh? People are crying even like, no, I was supposed to, I took my kids there and they're telling me there's no medicine. Now, I need to go to the pharmacy. What am I going to buy with it? Even I'm already struggling to get this money for transport. Not to go to hospital.
Exactly.
Huh? Hey, now, serious. Uh-uh. And then when you heard, how many money is the what? Taking out to go and take those even skeleton to come and rebuild them. Eish. Then you wonder now, there's no medicine in the hospital now. You see, the people are spending their money in there to repel those people who are already dead. It's something really good. I think our priority is not that we are not using the way it is supposed to be. We are spending money at the wrong stuff. But at the end of the day, we have our people dying. There's no medicine in the hospital, but we are buying SOVs. This is the learning. I'm telling you, one person is having maybe 4, 5, 6 cars following each other. Just imagine for petrol, it's so much expensive now.
Exactly.
Mm. Now you're having 6 cars for one person. Ay, man. No, no, no. But me, I don't understand also when it comes to these things, where the commander is protected like now. But remember, when they are campaigning, the person is not even followed by anybody. You can even shake a hand with that president. But later on, this president is then having what? 7 bodyguards, 10 cars. What? So many. But then I think something needs to be done. When it comes to Minister of Health, something needs to be done. I'm telling you, we need to address that. Because things are not okay in that minister. Just imagine even health passport you used to get. Now you have to go and buy your own home.
I also heard something like that.
No, it's a reality. Hey. Friend, me, I was also bitten by a dog. I went there, and my card so old. Now they are telling me, no, we don't have a passport there unless we are at you, right? And they said, no, just why did they take a bank of this one?
Mm-hmm.
What is that a dog bite? Yeah. And just imagine now. You are going to buy a book and then I start over again with one. Mm-hmm. Because now this is the one which is having my medical cosmos.
Exactly.
If I follow it away and then I start with a new book now, what happens? How do people know that maybe I'm having even what situation when it comes to my office? There's no record of it. And then there's my thing also we must have what? When it comes to this health passport, we must get the right of it. Then maybe we can have a thing like a USB. You know, this chip. Yeah.
Something digital.
Digitally, hello. That's what, when they are doing it in the ID, we can also have a medical digital, isn't it?
You know, now that you are saying this, it's Uncle Bona, yeah? Is the whole situation of, I understand that there was a lot of digitization that went on about, you know, perhaps the records in hospital. Now that you are saying this, it actually makes sense because, yeah, somehow maybe if there was somewhere where I could access my things. I mean, private companies do this. There are people who, with certain medical aids and such, you just go online, you log in, you can see your history of the medicines that you have taken, prescriptions that have been given to you. It is very fascinating too. I thought that was also where we were going. That was what the announcement was made from the Ministry of Health. And yet now to hear that people are having to pull out money also to get medical passports, it's so concerning.
Serious, what is happening? And already, I think that one is a stick with the Minister of Information. That college is not really doing anything. I'm telling you.
Hmm.
She also needs to pull up her socks. And I think you can even use people like, you know, this laptop people using Asian, because I worked there before. That car thing which you get is that you're voting car thing, because it's having a pin also. Not a pin. Having a bio, what, fingerprint.
Hmm.
Yeah, we can just use that one in the medicine.
Oh, yes, the biometrics, yeah.
Yeah, it will be easy. But now, my friend, just imagine, even if you lost your passport for, passport, you might end up not if people who know, don't know what kind of medicine you've been taking before, or whatever. Which kind of illness you have?
You know.
I think we need to come up with something really. And that's, Ministry of Health.
Oh, no, definitely.
Let me end up here too for today. Because I think our caller are not coming. I don't know what happened today.
Yeah, no. It's just one of those things that, you know, that's why we make sure to prepare enough, you know, at least yourselves, you give me that gap to say I finished the hours nicely enough, you know, without getting too quiet or so. So very much thank you, Uncle Bona. Believe me, when the topic is right, I mean, this one, as I was saying earlier, you know, people, the medical practitioners, it's very difficult to talk. It's very difficult to talk. There is something definitely happening in the ministry now where they will speak, but only when they know that, it must not tie back to me. So, no, thank you so much, Uncle Bona. Very much appreciated. We'll take that under consideration and maybe even have something moving forward to look deeper into the situation.
Okay, thanks,
man. All right, have a wonderful one.
Thank you.
Cheers. All right, that was Uncle Bona there. So we are now at 9. I am supposed to wrap up and give it over. So yes, let us now start saying goodbye. Of course, we could not get deeper into the information, but best believe we had reached the end of that deep dive, more or less. And what is now necessary is for us to keep an eye on the situation as it continues to develop, because the situation is dire. And for me, I think especially of our elders, I think especially of the people who have special needs. We have spoken of all these life threatening illnesses that are now lacking medicines, and what does that really mean, you know, for us, for the people. So before I hand it over, let's just do a quick run through,
So let's bring the morning together. We started with a crisis in parliament, a motion of no confidence against the speaker, the first in independent Namibia. SAPO has vowed she will be removed over our dead bodies, they say. The opposition say she's ruling with an iron fist. She can't rule on a motion against herself. The house is in chaos. And then we looked at the economy. Business borrowing dropped from 2.8 billion to 2.2 billion. We had Nino Mwenwa Vali Erastus, who came to give us some unpacking. He is from The Villager. Businesses are losing confidence. He says the economy is slowing. We also looked at the human cost of parliamentary paralysis. Oshivarongo residents marching because pensioners' debts are being ignored, while the municipality owes $30 million in unpaid salaries from a 2014 labor court order. We looked at the sovereignty question. Recon Africa raising $174 million to drill in the Kavango, while Namibia keeps getting these 5 to 15% stakes in its own resources. And we looked at our priorities. Malaria surging from 12,000 cases to 122,000 cases in a year. Medicine stocks at 60% reportedly. Middlemen pocketing $450 million for $100 million worth of medicine. ACC investigating 9 health officials for tender rigging. 5 stories, 1 question. Who is the system actually working for? The answer, I am afraid, is still the same as Friday. Not enough people. But here's the good news. You are listening and you are asking the right questions. Keep asking, keep calling, keep demanding answers. That is how we build a Namibia that serves the many, not the few. I will keep saying this. I am John J.P. Langer. This has been Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. We will be back tomorrow. Until then, stay informed, stay engaged, and stay strong. Haluta continua.